My wife, she was just saying to me this morning, we went for a run, and after the run, she said she heard this phrase recently about how moral character is based not so much on what we know, but who we love. I could know a lot of things about God, but actually I think my heart will only change if I love him. And I think this is a great passage to just, I think, gaze at God, how patient he is. He's present with his people and he's so faithful. And to say, well, I do love this God. I want to follow him. I want to obey him. I want to be bold.
How do you take complex narratives and stories from the Bible and teach them in a way that's clear? Today, we sat down once again with Dinesh Divyanathan, senior pastor of the Crossing Church in Singapore, and we asked him about a second talk from his sermon series on Judges, which is available on our channel wherever you get your podcasts. The sermon was on Judges chapter 6 and focused on the famous story of Gideon and the Lord's faithfulness to him.
In this talk, Dinesh took a large passage of scripture and taught it in a comprehensible way without skewing or negating the power of the passage. And so in today's episode, we asked him how he developed this skill. Additionally, we talked to him more about the book of Judges as a whole and what it means to know God's faithfulness as a Christian. My name's Tiff Stromso.
And my name's Leo Elborn, and this is the Bible Matters podcast, encouraging faithful Bible teaching and ministry. Dinesh Divyanathan, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Dinesh, your talks are so very clear. I think because you teach them very simply. Why do you want to make your sermons simple?
Great question. There's this saying that has kind of stuck in my mind. I don't know where it's from really. And the saying is this, that a mist in the pulpit creates a fog in the pew. A mist in the pulpit creates a fog in the pew. And I think that's just so helpful because I realize, therefore, what I need to do as a preacher is to be super, super clear. Have no mist so that there's no fog in people's minds and in people's hearts. And I guess the key about clarity is simplicity. So you don't want to be simplistic, but you want to be simple so that people can understand the text and therefore understand how they ought to respond to God through his word. I think about preaching, people think about preaching differently, don't they? I think for myself, if I can use a gun analogy, if that's allowed, I kind of think that my job as a expository preacher is to be a little bit like a sniper. So I'm trying to be razor focused. I'm trying to, you know, just focus in on what's the author's big point, what's his big purpose, and to try and drive that home and show that from the text as much as I can. I think my job is not to be a little bit like a shotgun where, you know, kind of the pellets go everywhere and they spray out, yeah, with lots and lots and lots of disjointed points. I think I've always tried to be a sniper, but maybe in my early years, I added, you know, a few more shotgun bits here and there to try and show more things. And I realized actually that potentially that distracts from the main thing that the author wants to say. So I think as far as possible, I try to be as much a sniper as possible so that I think what the author wants to bring out, that rings really, really clear and really simple.
So teaching one clear point rather than multiple.
Yes, if possible.
If possible.
Do you like that analogy, being an ex-army member, too?
I love it. I mean, I was never a sniper, but yes, I love it.
Were you in the army, typically?
I was briefly.
Okay.
She was the shotgun woman, though.
There you go.
Dinesh, Judges is a story. What do you think is the best way to preach a biblical story?
Yeah, you know, the most helpful book, I think, about preaching the genre of biblical narrative is Dale Ralph Davis' book, The Word Became Fresh. Super thin, super helpful. What he does each chapter is he just tries to help you to notice just the key things about the genre of biblical narrative with tons of examples. So we get all our trainees to read that book when we're trying to think about how to preach Old Testament narrative. And I think there's a few things that I kind of have thought about and try and focus on. One is, I think, to just look at a narrative like a film director. So I think that's super helpful because that's so, you know, the Old Testament narrative, New Testament narrative, so different to an epistle, which is an argument. Whereas here, I'm kind of looking at a story, and it's super helpful, I've found, to just try and approach it as if I'm a film director, in which case I'm asking myself, which are the main scenes in this story? And what are the characters doing and saying and feeling in each of these scenes? How is God feeling about what's going on? And I think that just brings the text alive to me because I can then try and picture what's really going on. So I think that that's quite helpful in my mind to think of it like a movie director and these big scenes.
That is to think scene by scene, where are we? Who's there? What's going on? What's the tone? What's the feel? How does it change into the next scene? Almost thinking through the cuts.
Yes. Yes, okay. I think so. Okay. Yeah. So I find it really helpful because then each scene is trying to develop the story. Mm-hmm. And if we can kind of like understand where the scene changes are, I think that really helps. But I think the second thing is that I realize a lot of people, when they try and preach biblical narrative, retell the story, and maybe they retell it even really well. But the problem is that I'm kind of lost as to what's the point of the story. So the introduction might tell me what I'm supposed to be looking out for. Then they go into a half an hour, 40 minutes of retelling the story. And then I emerge at the end of that half an hour, 40 minutes. And then they now tell me what's the point of the story. And I think what you need to do is lace it all the way through. So to keep, you know, as you're preaching the scenes, to get people to reflect back how this scene points to maybe the big point of purpose of the passage again and again and again. So you're kind of linking it up. For people. I mean, not many people have the patience to wait through 30, 40 minutes of a retelling, even a very, very lively one. And then you tell me what it's about at the end. So I think I just want to put those two things together.
Are there any other mistakes you try and avoid when you're preaching biblical narrative?
Yeah, I guess maybe a big one is to not fixate on the details. Sometimes they're really fascinating details. Maybe you have a great temptation to try and dig in, but to try and just pull back and ask myself, what's the narrative as a whole? What are all the scenes saying as a whole? I think that that's quite important. I guess another obvious one is just not reading ourselves into the story too much. So I suppose in the book of Judges, you could say, you know, I don't know, be an Othniel, be an Ehud. That'd be quite interesting. Be an Ehud.
Keep my sword on my left side or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, I don't know, don't be Barak, don't be Samson or something. So I think to resist that temptation, because ultimately the characters are not the heroes, the narratives are not primarily about us. But I think I first heard this maybe from David Jackman years and years ago. He's talked about how the Bible is God preaching God to us. And that's so helpful. Then I need to ask myself, well, what am I learning about God from this passage? He's the hero. So I think that safeguards me from a lot of potential errors.
And I guess on that, you said that this talk was about God's faithfulness. We were learning how he is faithful to his people and to his judge. As you began to study this passage, how did you arrive at that conclusion?
Yeah, as I read Judges 6 and I was trying to figure out what was going on with Gideon, I think it was really a surprise to me that Gideon was, you know, just wavering all the way through the text. And I was like, wow, this guy is really a Muppet. Like, you know, again and again and again, you know, God is reassuring him. And at every juncture, there's doubt and there's fear. But yet God persists with him. There's doubt, there's fear, God persists with him. And I just found it really, really surprising. Like it just was not what I expected at all. I mean, even the start of the passage where Israel was brought very low by the Midianites. And then, you know, they cried out to God. And then God basically blamed them and said, well, it's you guys, right? It's your fault. You turned away from me. You feared the gods of the Amorites in the land. if not abate my voice. And you kind of read that and you think the next thing God is going to do is obliterate the people, but that's not what he does. He raises for them a judge and he raises Gideon. So I think the thing that kind of jumped out at me was just the surprise. The surprise is actually how God keeps persisting. He's so patient and so faithful to his people. So I think that kind of alerted me to, what am I learning here? I'm just seeing God preach God's faithfulness and patience to me, I guess.
And can you help us think through why the reader of Judges needs to know that message?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard to know exactly who the original audience of Judges was. I guess definitely after Israel had kings. Is it before David? Is it after David? I guess there's a lot of unknowns about that. But I guess whoever it was, Israel would have continued to be surrounded by enemy nations. It was always challenging for them to obey God, to listen to their king. I guess the fear and doubt of Gideon really, in some ways, was a picture of a larger national problem, that it was always hard for God's people to obey him. They were always filled with doubt. They were always filled with fear. And I guess this passage, perhaps, is there to just reassure God's people that actually when you're doubting, when you're fearful, that's not when God withdraws from you. Actually, you can, you know, trust that he's there, he's patient, and you can just keep pushing on. One surprising thing, we haven't really looked at it much in our sermon series, is just how Hebrews 11 ends, which is just quite stunning because, you know, as you read Judges, not many of the judges look very good. But then they all get mentioned at the end of Hebrews 11 in a positive way. And why is that? Well, I think despite all their foibles, I guess, and their doubt and their weakness, fundamentally, they did trust God. Fundamentally, did it kind of come good in the end? And I think that's just so encouraging. They were not meant to be picture perfect, 100% obedient people, but that in our weakness, in our doubting, in our fears, the Lord is trying to say, yeah, just keep going. Just keep going. I'm there with you. I'm there with you. I think that this should be an encouragement to Israel and to us.
Dinesh, on a slightly different note, at the end of your talk, you had an aside all about guidance in reference to Gideon's fleece and that famous story. And I think you were saying that isn't a good model for us to know how we get guidance from God. Can you just explain a bit more about that? And in particular, just explain why you feel you needed to put that in at the end of your sermon.
Yeah, well, I guess guidance, it's always such a confusing topic for Christians. I mean, we're keen to know how God guides us today. And I guess the whole problem with the Gideon episode with the fleeces is that's so commonly used as an example for Christians on how supposedly God does guide us. So I think Christians are often asked to ask God for signs, and then God will affirm whether you should make decision A or decision B based on a particular sign that you've asked him to prove. And this is the big kind of justifying passage. So I guess coming to it, I wanted to kind of debunk that myth to just help people see, well, that's not really what the text is about, and neither is that what the way God guides us. But I guess the wider issue would be to just, as we kind of waded through the whole passage, to help people to see, well, actually, Gideon hasn't been a great model, has he? All the way through, he's doubted God, he's been fearful of God. And even here, right at the very end, he continues to doubt God again and again. So surely the last thing you ought to do is be like Gideon in this episode. If anything, you ought to not be like Gideon. So I guess, yeah, because it's such a life issue, because the passage is so misused in this particular way, I thought it was important to kind of address just quickly.
Dinesh, I'd love to ask you about how you go through the process of turning a complicated passage into a simple talk. You've already said at the start why you want to do that, but how do you actually achieve that?
Yeah, I think I try and do that in a few ways. So once I've done the hard work on the text, then I want to kind of write out a kind of a point and purpose statement. So just a short little phrase, which would summarize what's the point of the passage, what's it about as a whole, what's the purpose of the passage. And I want that to kind of be my guide, because I think I write it there for clarity, and I write it there so that I know what to put in the sermon and what to take out from the sermon. Because as I said from the start, I want to, as far as possible, be a sniper. So I don't want to kind of be distracted from it too much or add too many other bullets, if you like. So I think that's the first thing I do. I have a kind of point and a purpose statement. The second thing I do is, as I'm writing my sermon or I'm typing my sermon, I'm kind of talking. So these days, not actually, but but I'm talking in my head. And I do that because sermons are all about how they sound. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think we are all schooled in writing, you know, lengthy essays that sound terrible because they're academic essays. But actually trying to verbalize what we're typing as we're writing a sermon, I think is super helpful, because that will add to clarity and simplicity, because it's a verbal thing. So I'm always trying to do that. I guess the third thing about trying to make a talk simple is just, you know, I guess with properties, location, 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 with sermon writing, it's editing, editing, editing. So I think just as I, you know, I sit in the other podcast, I try and write a week in advance of when I preach. And I think that really aids with editing and with clarity and with being simple. And I guess my goal is that I want to kind of get out of the way of my audience. I want to get out of the way of the audience so that actually what they get really is the author and the text, rather than maybe my confusions and lack of clarity. So yeah, three little things which help me.
Do you think, just to push you on it a bit, that there's ever a danger of oversimplifying a passage? And I guess someone could be sitting there thinking, oh yeah, God's faithfulness, I've heard that before. Come on, Dinesh, give me something a bit more meaty. Give me something a bit more intellectual to think about.
Yeah, there is a danger, I guess, if we're being simplistic. And I guess even with like God's faithfulness, then what you want to do is show me from the text how that's true. You want to tease it out in my life so that I can see how this really hits the ground day to day. I think you don't want to be simplistic where maybe if there are different nuances, you just flatten everything. I think that's what you want to avoid doing. So I guess if I'm thinking of some other passages, when we're preaching Judges 4 and 5 on Deborah and Barak, it's easy to kind of maybe just be a bit simplistic, have a really hard go at Barak and at men who don't lead, I suppose, to some degree. You got justification from that. You know, Judges 4 verse 9, Barak won't have the glory. They'll go to a woman instead. But then I think that might be a bit too simplistic. And what you want to do is realize those two chapters together, they're really about how God, he's the warrior of his people. He's calling them to kind of line up with him, to join him as friends. So you want to kind of drive those things home. So I don't think you could be, being simplistic is unhelpful, but being simple, I think actually is really, really helpful, because it's clear in people's mind what the passage is about. And then you want to drill down about application.
So I guess what you're saying is, in some ways, it's not really like you're deliberately trying to be simple, but you're just trying to be very accurate in regards to what the passage is saying. And actually, I suppose a lot of the time that as a byproduct does result it being quite a simple talk.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I think preachers overcomplicate things by just too many cross references and too many connections. I mean, you wanna show those connections when they are helpful. So John Chapman is, well, I guess, one of the first preaching teachers I had in Bible College and Moore College in Sydney. And he always said to us, only show me a context or cross-reference where it is absolutely necessary to make the point the author is making in the text, which I think is quite helpful, because then the author's in the driving seat of this passage. And actually, I only want to bring other supporting passages when it aids what the author is trying to do. And I think sometimes we just try to be too clever. I can show you, you know, four other allusions here and three other cross references there, and then I become a little bit like the expert. And then people kind of get lost really in all the details. People love Bible trivia, don't they? They love to know all these connections. And at the end, you ask them, well, what was it about? And then they're like, I'm not really sure.
I mean, to be honest with you, I love Bible trivia. I think I've fallen into that trap loads of times. And you're like, oh my goodness, this one word is a little bit like this other one word 10 books ago and that kind of thing. Yeah, no one else seems to find it exciting, but there we go.
Dinesh, I think something that is particularly striking about this sermon that we're thinking about, Judges 6, is that it was a long passage and you made a long passage simple. I find that a bit daunting. I'd rather be given kind of five verses and told kind of work out a main point there. But how do you find it? Does a long passage put you off? How do you work out what is that main point from so many verses?
Yeah, does it put me off? Not really, although we try and preach within half an hour. And my personal rule is 3,000 words, which sounds quite short, doesn't it? But I think I preach quite slowly. I have quite a lot of pauses. So when you're dealing with a long passage and trying to write just 3,000 words sermon, maybe it becomes a bit daunting. But I think the key is to realize that exposition is not about preaching every verse line by line. That's commentary. But an expositor's job actually is to try and figure out what's the big thing the author is saying. What are the bits in the text which highlight that? And so it's okay for me to skip bits of it, as long as I'm able to kind of draw people's attention to the main turns of the passage, which highlight what the author is saying. So in that sense, I don't find it daunting, but it's a choice, obviously.
I guess I sometimes look at a big long passage and I might not be daunted, but to be honest with you, I might think it's kind of boring. How do you help your congregation see that biblical narratives like this aren't boring?
Yeah, I love the biblical narrative. Like, you know, stories are the greatest things, really. It's just so exciting. I guess the main thing is to get to the mood and feel of the text. So if I'm trying to understand the passage myself, I'm trying to ask myself what's happening, how the characters responding, how they're feeling, how's God feeling. I'm trying to make the narrative kind of come alive and just not see it as a story, but think of the emotions behind the story as well as it's being played out. So I think I find that really helpful. And if you can bring that across, then immediately it's not boring anymore. And I guess I'm asking myself, what's the big truth here about God? What's God teaching me about himself? And, you know, Don Carson has this nice statement where he says, you know, once you find a big truth in the passage, then make it sing or make it sting.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if it's a positive thing, make it sing in the hearts of people. If it's a hard truth, then make it sting. And then I guess your job as a preacher is, how can I make it sing? How can I make it sting in the hearts of my people? So I find those things quite helpful.
How did you make this talk sing or sting?
I think I tried to retell the story well. And I think I tried to keep what I thought was a surprise all the way through, which was God's reaction at every juncture of doubt and fear, maybe faithlessness, to try and show that surprise. So I think as I was retelling the story, you know, it's kind of like four big scenes. The first scene where Israel's under Midian, and then God basically blames them, like I said earlier, for fearing the gods of the Amorites, not obeying God's voice. You expect God to judge the people, and then surprise, surprise, he doesn't. He raises a judge. So to help people to feel the surprise of that. And then to look at the next scene, Gideon's call, and then to just see him as this wavering character, you know, at every juncture, he tries to get out of it, right? I mean, he says to God, oh, you know, actually, in the first place, why didn't you help us with Midian? Then after that, God answers him. And he says, well, in the second place, you know, I'm the weakest of my clan and I'm the least of my father's house. And then God assures him. And then he says, okay, then show me a sign. And then God actually shows him a sign. I mean, just the surprise again and again, God persisting. And I think to try and convey that to people. I used in the sermon, I used an illustration of a pendulum. where it kind of kept swinging the text. It swung to Gideon's doubting fears, and then it swings back to kind of God's reassurance, his patience, his faithfulness. And then it swings again to Gideon's doubting fears, and then it swings again to God's assurance and his patience. So to try and use that illustration of a pendulum as I retold the story, to just try and get people to feel the mood of the text. I guess if I am, as the preacher, excited, struck by the truth of the passage, that will come across in the way I convey it. And maybe I'm slightly strange, but I often feel on Sunday mornings, this is the most important passage ever to be that people need to hear. You know, I mean, maybe my wife has heard that too often, and I'm like, oh, people really need to hear this today. But that's good, because in a way, you know, I've got a bit of zip and energy as I head to the pulpit.
Yeah, of course, of course. Are there any other ways you generally try to avoid being boring in your preaching?
Yeah, I think to be a bit pacey with the storytelling, not labor things. I think to try and emotively connect with people. Don't just tell the story as a bland story, but to try and help them to feel what's going on and connect to where they are now. I think maybe that helps. Sometimes, I mean, not so much in this particular sermon in Judges 6, but sometimes some contemporary asides, like as you're retelling the story, help them to see how, oh, you know, this is kind of like us in this situation, in this scenario, to try and just help people make that connection, because it just seems like a different world and a different time.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something. Did you say Gideon was a CrossFitter, that kind of thing?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that was helpful. It was helpful. It brings the story to life and helps us picture it, understand.
The mighty man of valor, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
And there was something about James Bond's moments as well. It always seems to come back to spies and guns with you, Dinesh.
Yes, now you know I'm quite limited.
Dinesh, you said at the start of your talk that some people think of God like a distant grandfather or a cruel schoolmaster. Why do you think so many people feel that way?
Yeah, I guess with the distant grandfather, I think people often cry out to God, maybe in desperation, and they don't seem to hear him, or they don't know where to hear him. Which is true, his word. So I guess that's quite a common feeling. I suppose when you look at the world and things that are happening or in our broken lives, it's easy to feel that way. I guess with a cruel schoolmaster, that's really the impression of God that religion gives us, isn't it? Sometimes Christianity as well, that God is unapproachable, he's scary somehow, and therefore, you know, he's just out to punish you. And I guess if you add that in with just the guilt you and I feel for our sin day to day, then it's easy, I think, to have that really, really negative connotation of God. You know, it's quite interesting. We run in our church a newcomers group, which is a one-year program for not people who are new Christians, but Christians who've newly joined our church. And what I find really fascinating over the years of running these groups is if I ask these Christians to kind of summarize their Christianity to me, almost all of them will say, oh, I became a Christian because it's historical. It's true. There's the facts of the Bible, blah, 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 blah. That's great. Almost everyone will say, you know, I became a Christian because of the judicial elements of the Bible or the gospel. I'm forgiven. You know, phew, I'm no longer under God's wrath. And that's great. Actually, very few people would describe the gospel or summarize Christianity relationally. That actually, yes, it's true. Yes, there's a judicial element to it. But fundamentally, I've been saved to be in a relationship with God. I'm saved to be his child. It's a relationship of joy, of love, of devotion. And it's about enjoying God. I think that element is almost always missing or absent. So I only say that because, yeah, we kind of default to those negative views of God, don't we? Cruel schoolmaster. He's out to get me. I'm so happy. Judicially, I'm okay with him. or his distant grandfather. I just can't even know him. He doesn't care, which is a pity, which is such a pity.
I guess just in terms of preaching from judges, I mean, I can think back to when I was a fresher at university and I sat in one of my first theology lectures and it was a module on introduction to Christianity. And I remember in the very first lecture, the professor made a joke about how the gods of the Old Testament in particular is on a short fuse. That's what he said. And everyone laughed and I felt very uncomfortable. That kind of view is quite popular though, that, you know, there are two gods, the God of the Old Testament, God of the New Testament, and, you know, God of the New Testament is all kind and loving. The Old Testament God is this impatient judge and distant grandfather. How would you respond to that kind of accusation?
It is so unhelpful to have that dichotomy. I mean, it is true that in the Old Testament, you see God acting in judgment again and again. But even then, the context in which he acts in judgment is in a context where the people have turned their backs on him. He's done everything possible to save them and show compassion to them, and yet they're so stubborn. So I think you see God not just lashing out in anger like maybe you and I would, but the judgment actually comes from a God who's given his people a lot of rope, as it were. But I think alongside that, actually, his judgment is good and his judgment is right. You and I cry out for judgment all the time in our personal lives, in the world that we live in, which is such a mess. We don't want sin and wickedness to persist. We think judgment is good. We think justice is a good thing. We cry out for justice, all of us do. And actually, I think to take a step back and to see it's good that this God does not allow sin to just continue. And he puts an end to it. It is really, really something to be thankful for. But I guess alongside that, you know, like from this passage from Judges 6 and so many other places, you just see God being amazingly gracious and compassionate, being patient with his people. You know, as he says in Exodus, that he is a God who is long-suffering. He's a God of chesed, covenant love. And that's what you see again and again and again. If he was just like what your university lecturer said, I guess the Bible would be really short, Genesis 3, and there'll be it.
Yeah. I wish I could go back 11 years and stand up in that lecture and tell him, but there we go.
I was just going to say, I guess we can empathize. I think, Dinesh, what you were saying just now about the fact that we know our sin, but you're right that actually what Jesus did on the cross for us achieves so much more than just that judicial element, but that relationship with God. That is such a wonderful positive. I guess I'm just saying I wish more people could see that in the Bible about who God is.
I guess drawing all this together, Dinesh, what do you say to people who do have that view of God in your church? They feel God is uninterested or just merely harsh.
Then I'll say that I think they've seen some aspects, maybe they see some aspects of God, maybe not even brightly, but I think they haven't come to the heart of who he is. So I say to the guys in our newcomers group, that if you just see God as historic, the Bible, the gospel is historical or judicial, you don't see the relational aspect. I think you've kind of stripped the gospel of its heart, really, because fundamentally, God is Father. And we're his children. I mean, that is mind blowing if you think about it. And if you think of some of the other relational images, you know, like a shepherd and his sheep, again, that's quite a mind blowing picture. If you think of bridegroom and bride, I mean, you can't get more intimate than that. So to just try and help people see that actually maybe our default categories are not quite right and they're not quite the Bible categories for where things go. Yeah, to just try and help them to rethink and reframe their picture of God.
Dinesh, how were you encouraged by this truth of God's faithfulness?
Yeah, I think I was just really, really warmed in my heart, I think, by seeing how patient God is, how faithful he is to Gideon. I found it quite mind-blowing. And I think, you know, for myself, I think so often I do doubt. So often I am fearful. So often I wonder whether I really should be a God. And I just gazing at God, I guess, from this passage and how he just persists with Gideon and so gentle with him. I think that really steeled my faith and gave me confidence to be bold, that, you know, Dinesh, you can take God at his word. You don't have to doubt. You can be fearless. You can be bold. And, you know, just kind of gave me, I think, more and more confidence to do that. And I guess if I thought of God's faithfulness then in Jesus, then even more so. You know how we always have a laugh at the disciples. They're like these bumbling fools or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so often, I mean, you know, they are disciples of little faith. They abandon Jesus, mm-hmm. but he's so gentle with them again and again and again. Just his kindness, his compassion. I think that's really, really very helpful. My wife, she was just saying to me this morning, we went for a run. And after the run, when I was still panting and she was totally fine already because she's much more fit than I am. But she said she heard this phrase recently about how moral character is based not so much on what we know, but who we love. Moral character based not so much on what we know, but who we love. And that's so helpful because I could know a lot of things about God, but actually I think my heart will only change if I love him. And I think this is a great passage to just, I think, gaze at God, how patient he is. He's present with his people and he's so faithful. And to say, well, I do love this God. I want to follow him. I want to obey him. I want to be bold. I don't want to be shielded.
Does your wife say profound things on every run?
Maybe, but you know, I'm panting at the back. So.
You're on the floor half a mile behind.
She heard it from some podcast. I can't remember which one, but there you go.
Oh. Dinesh, what kind of feedback have you been getting from your congregations as you've been going through this series in Judges?
Yeah, actually quite positive. I think on two levels, like lots of people had a very kind of cursory understanding of Judges. And maybe, you know, they only know Gideon and then they know the story of Samson. But even then, they know just one little bit of the story of Samson. So I think it's just given them a real feel for the book and where it fits into the biblical narrative. So on one level, I think people found it very exciting. But I think on another level, kind of like the stuff I've already been sharing about just seeing God in a different light, I think has been quite amazing. So I think for lots of people, they just... you know, I was talking to a friend who just said that actually when he was a kid and he heard Judges preached in the church he grew up in, it was basically just berating them that you are just like these people. You're so sinful. And it's just negative. Mm-hmm. And I think for him to see, yes, on the one hand, we are these people who kind of locked in sin. But on the other hand, to see this gracious, faithful God, I think has been very uplifting. So it's actually... been a really good book for us, I think.
Dinesh, is there anything you'd change if you could preach this passage again?
Yeah, I think for sure. You never have a perfect sermon, right? So you always will change something. Yeah, I thought about actually being more pointed with my application at the start. So I did talk about us being maybe doubting or fearful. But maybe I could dig into that a bit more and think about instances when we do doubt God with our faith, instances where we are fearful in our faith, and maybe return to some of those at the end. I think that might have been quite helpful. And then, you know, again, trying to use what we've seen about the truth about God in this passage to try and help us in our hearts to not be doubting, fearful people. Yeah, so maybe I could have done a little bit, just sharpen that application a little bit.
Dinesh, it's been so great having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bible Matters podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, why not like and subscribe on whatever platform you get your podcasts? The Bible Matters Project is funded entirely by the generous gifts of our listeners. And if you yourself would like to become a financial partner with us, you can find more details on how to give in the show notes. The Bible Matters Podcast is an initiative of St. Helens Bishopsgate and is created by myself, Leo Elborn, along with Tiff Stromsay. Music for this episode was written and produced by me, Leo Elborn, and Josh Stidwell. You can listen to more of Josh's work at Stids with a one. That's STYDS. Thanks again for joining, and we hope to see you again soon.